Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Once again, talking about the game we all love.
We are indeed. One of our Sunday night records straight after a final. And it might not have been the closest final ever, but it was a memorable one, a brilliant one, and an amazing winner, really.
Very much so, Phil. We do like them occasionally. It feels like we may have done a few of them this season, but yeah, what a buzz it is when we just watched the final, just watched the trophy being lifted. And it's been lifted by one of this game's evergreen greats. Mark Williams is the Tour Championship winner. He did it in some style, didn't he, Phil? Beat Ronnie O'Sullivan 10-5 in the final. And it really was a high-quality affair. But one of the big things to say, really, is that, well, funny enough, I've been writing in recent days, reminding myself, as if we need reminding, of that stunning effort from Luca Purcell to win seven frames in a row, to win that quarterfinal against Ronnie O'Sullivan at the World Championship last year. Well, Mark Williams won seven in a row tonight. I mean, you know, it really is something else. It was 5-3 to Ronnie. He himself had won four frames in a row. Just the highest quality. The break came at the wrong time for him, of course. Breaks do change matches. It was Taylor's eldest time, that one. Williams tonight, just absolutely superb. Blitz Ronnie off the table. And what can we say, Phil? I said on social media tonight, snooker meets art with Mark Williams. Nobody's ever played the game with his levels of grace and beauty. Still winning big pots at the age of 49. It defies belief. He said tonight, Phil, not bad for a part-timer. Sums it up quite well. He's not really a part-timer, but he likes his fun away from the game. We know that. But I said it remains an absolute privilege to watch him, and it really does. This class of 92, there's no more superlatives, Phil. They were taken many, many years ago. So you have to look, just find the best ones now to repeat.
Yeah, tricky, isn't it? Yeah, unbelievable. But I think what is amazing about them is it's not, I know there's not enough, we want more young talent coming through, but it's not like these sort of old codgers are just playing, sort of deteriorating and playing bad stuff and no one can beat them. They're playing like unbelievable stuff. That's why people can't beat them. And it was amazing, just so many breaks tonight, real sort of swings. Williams started, then Ronnie, those four in a row was brilliant. And then, yeah, Ronnie was poor tonight, has to be said, but Williams was brilliant. There's not much he could have done about some of the stuff he was doing there. Yeah, fantastic. And Williams has sort of come up short in some big games in recent years, and sort of maybe like wobbled a bit of the line, but he didn't look like doing that at all here. Really powered to victory. Maybe the last frame was the edgiest of the lot, so maybe a little bit there, but not really. He was just really, really superb. And yeah, I mean, I think most people, after watching Ronnie end that afternoon session, go 5-3 up. I didn't look at the odds or anything, but most people would have been tipping Ronnie. And to not win another frame, remarkable stuff. So, yeah, brilliant to see. Everyone loves watching Mark Williams, I'm pretty sure. I certainly do. Nice to see him with his whole family there. They're all loving it. Yeah, just nice scenes and great words from them both. Ronnie was very magnanimous in defeat there. And some very kind words for Mark.
He's a good beaten man, isn't he, Ronnie? Actually, that's when you actually see, you know, we had quite a good quotes all round actually from Ronnie this week. But I think, you know, if you didn't know the sort of nuance, you might think, oh, he's probably bad when he loses. Not he, that's when he speaks his best actually, and you tend to get stuff from the heart then from Ronnie, and he sort of says it how it is often. And yeah, you're right. He's really fulsome in his praise. And Mark Williams, of course, classic humility, isn't it? Really, still, you know, I can't believe I'm here doing that. I can't believe I'm winning this. You know. Even though he's one of the greats, but that's the nature of the man, of course. And didn't he say one of his children was there to see Ronnie? Quite like that. Yeah. Nice.
I think that one of his kids goes to most things and the other two not so much. So he was saying that only there because he's playing Ronnie.
Great stuff. But I mean, yeah, you know, those words again defies belief. You know, you've got to say he is 49 now. And the thing about these guys, they sort of seem ageless in a way. I mean, they're making themselves seem ageless. So, you know, they're just numbers really in some ways, but it's like, yeah, he's actually 49. You have to remind yourself, this is unusual in the history of the game. Okay, there's three of them doing it, but I mean, John hasn't won a tournament for a while, but you know, he's still very much one of the leading stars of the game. Ronnie, of course, has won a couple of world championships recently, and Mark's still winning. I did say tonight, Phil, as well, I wonder if it's the best thing for his crucible prospects of Ronnie to lose. And I said, oh, you know, Mark won't care about my hammy old superstitions. He's obviously a crucible contender too. But a couple of people kindly pointed out they're not just superstitions, actually. There's hard evidence to say. And it's across sports issues. You get it in the golf majors. I never like the prospects of the guy that's just won. But having said that, you know, they're both going to fancy their chances, clearly. You know, Ronnie, the player of the season, you know, he's done so well to get to another big final. As you say, at 5-3, I think most would have gone for Ronnie, not just because he had that slight lead and he was playing so well, but the history is very much in his favour as well. Mark's won a recent Masters match. Oh, Phil, before we forget, first ranking final for nearly a quarter of a century since December 2000 at the China Open. I mean, you get some funny old stats in this game, don't you?
Yeah, very surprising. I remember when he went through to the final, I thought, oh, this feels like a while since they played in a final, but I never would have guessed that long. Yeah, bizarre. Someone even texted me, someone who watches a bit of snooker, saying, has the commentator just said that earlier today? I was like, yeah. So it did ring. It did surprise everyone from the most diehard to a casual fan. So, yeah, funny little quirk.
Definitely. And let me just update you with the top six, only as I want to do with ranking events. Ronnie O'Sullivan, 41. Stephen Hendry, 36. John Higgins, 31. Steve Davis, 28. Judd Trump, 28. Mark Williams, 26, Phil. So it really is something else, you know. And the other thing to remember, of course, about Williams, which I think we must do, I mean, we say it here from time to time, but it's always worth remembering in our own minds, it wasn't that far from quitting. In 17, you know, what's that, 7 years back now, you know, he was in a pretty bad place. He wasn't really winning stuff, wasn't winning all that many matches. And he was just thinking, you know, have I got much of a future to come back, win the world title that season, and then to continue on this path of success, really? And he's actually put pots in the cabinet pretty regularly since that 18 world title, isn't he? I mean, he doesn't really go very long without them. He sort of ticks over, second title again this season. And, well, he may talk down his Sheffield chances, Phil, as he's prone to do, but we won't be. No one else will be.
No, not at all. Yeah, I mean, Stephen Hendry actually mentioned this on the telly. I think he was 25-1 for the World Championships before this tournament. He'll certainly come in now. And yeah, I mean, he's liable to be anyone at any stage in any tournament. Certainly if he plays like he has this week. And it's so unlikely this week. I mean, we know how good he is, but you know, he'll sometimes be saying, oh, I don't practice much and whatever, and you're never sure how much to believe. But we know he was playing pool in China until just a short while before the event, turned up jet lagged. I mean, he was talking down his chances, but it was sort of understandable. You know, I don't think anyone was expecting him to win this event. And he's beaten the top three players in the world and produced that amazing clearance against Ford in the first round. It was just remarkable stuff. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that spell, sort of 16-17, I mean, he had to go to World Championship. I know this big story this season about Robertson going to World Championship qualifying. Of course, Williams had to do it and failed to get through a couple of times. And it really did seem like that was it in terms of winning things. Obviously, someone with that talent, you wouldn't be surprised if he had the odd good run. But no one was really thinking he was going to win big trophies on a regular basis ever again. And yeah, here he is still doing it again this season. I mean, that British Open title seems so long ago. It's hard to forget. This is actually his second big title of the season. And he got to the Championship League final, first event of the campaign. So yeah, it's another just ridiculous season from him. And Ronnie was saying he thinks he's as good as he ever has been, and Williams even was agreeing with it, really, certainly in an all-round game. Maybe not every bit of it is quite as sharp as it was at certain times, but the overall package creates as good a player as there's ever been. So it's remarkable stuff.
And a quick word about player of the season again, which I know I've become a little bit obsessed by, but a few people are insisting that Vonnie's quite clearly the player of the season. I don't think it's quite as clear-cut as people are saying. Yes, it is him, but I think if Judd Trump wins at the Crucible, Judd's getting my vote. And I'm wondering, if Mark Williams wins at the Crucible, is he getting people's votes? I mean, we often say the World Championship counts for maybe three events. Probably not. But I think my point is that, you know, if it was totally clear-cut in Ronnie's favour, then it wouldn't matter who won the World Championship, Ronnie's getting Player of the Year. I'm not sure that's quite the case. I think people can overtake him, perhaps, with the World Championship win. But anyway, we got lots to catch up on, Phil. We were on the air last time, weren't we? And we knew the lineup for the quarterfinals. And they were a funny old mixed bag, I have to say. Ronnie O'Sullivan beat Ali Carter 10-2. Non-contest, and on some levels, a bit of a non-event, really. A lot of hype that day, of course, about the you know, mutual dislike that's clearly there, mutual loathing at times, actually. But I think you made the point at one time on here, or maybe just to me, actually, we were chatting away, that is a bit of the age-old issue, not just with this rivalry, but quite a few, actually, maybe quite a few with Ronnie. It's not really much of a rivalry on the table. Ronnie just blitzes Ali time and time and time again, you know, and yeah, Ali didn't really show up. Ronnie played, you know, well in patches. That was enough for a sort of very heavy win. Gary Wilson beat Zhang Ander 10-8. Well, that's the definition of a hard-fought win, that one. That was a real old, good battle, I thought. Really enjoyed it. Breaks of 94, 85 and 50 from Wilson to win it from 8-7 down. Mark Williams, a man that, of course, as we know, went all the way to lift the trophy. He beat Judd Trump 10-4. Now, I saw most of the early stages of that. Very funny. I mean, Judd just kept finding more and more outrageous ways to lose frames, is the way I read it. I mean, it just sort of seemed to, oh, he's won this one, definitely. Then sort of 10, 15 minutes later, he's lost that one. He just, like, so many weird things happened. So some things sort of conspired a bit against Judd. Some things, yeah, he was at fault, really, for not just, you know, finishing the deal. And he never seen, I didn't see the later bit, but he obviously never really recovered from that. Mark claiming a very notable win there, a 10-4 win. I think you alluded to it, you know, maybe I did as well, that no one saw that coming. Absolutely no one would have said that scoreline, I'm sure of that. Then Mark Williams made a bit of weather on television, Phil. He was on ITV, and Rob Walker asked him, is there a genuine chance you might not be playing snooker next season? Williams answered, no, I'll be playing snooker next season. Then he added, I'm treating it as this could possibly be my last one, my last event on ITV. Obviously, pretty cryptic stuff from Mark, but it does offer more hints, doesn't it, towards potential changes being afoot. Players have long been calling for more freedom in terms of playing events on the main tour and possibly playing more events elsewhere too. And it seems like the way is being paved. Some of those extra freedoms along the lines of what players have been wanting. So we await potential more developments on that. And also, to complete the picture from the quarterfinal, Mark Allen beat Ding Junhui 10-8. Always seems good. I think a couple of the pundits, I think Henry was saying, always seems great when these two meet. Three centuries, including a 1-4-2 from Allen in that one. And it was him that just got over the line this time. And obviously completed a brilliant semi-final lineup. You're going to get those most of the time in the Tour Championship. Another one here. So lots to talk about there, Phil. No one had Williams 10 Trump 4, did they?
No, they didn't. And Trump was bad. Yeah, I mean, Neil Fowles said on TV that he thinks it's the worst performance he's seen of him all season. And to be fair, he's had an awful lot of good performances. So that's not too much of a criticism, but it wasn't good. And Stephen Hendry said, you know, it's going to be a bit worrying if that's your last game before the World Championship when you've just sort of flopped there. But, you know, these things can happen. As I say, he's had an unbelievably consistent season. It just happened to have his bad one there. But, yeah, it was an odd one for sure. I mean, Williams only made 250 breaks, and to beat Judd Trump 10-4 in that manner, very odd. But, yeah, I mean, a great win for Mark. Yeah, that Gary Wilson game, I think, I don't know how much was on TV. I definitely caught the end and I think it had been quite scrappy in times, but then Wilson really powered to victory at the end and was quite good. And so that narrative that he was spinning continued, that he was sort of playing really badly, just sort of just like how he was playing. He just throughout the tournament, he's had a great run. He's on debut, got to the semi-finals, but he was insistent that, you know, he was hating every second of it and couldn't really find any comfort at the table. But, you know, he's spoken about that quite a few times. He just struggles to enjoy the game because he's such a perfectionist, which, you know, a lot of players will relate to. Ding was looking very good there. I thought he was going to get through. I think Ding's going to be interesting at the Crucible this year. I think he's got a good run in him. I think his sort of progression from sort of the depths in sort of early COVID, where he wasn't playing a lot, and when he was playing, wasn't doing that well. It's been a slow progression back towards his best. And I think he has continued that. And he looked good. I know he had lost, but he looked good in parts there. And I think he's going to be a real threat again to start racking up titles. Like he was really racking them up a fair few years ago now, and it's been a pretty barren spell for him really in terms of silverware. But I don't think it's too far away again now.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good way of summing it up. And we moved into the semi-finals then, and Ronnie O'Sullivan 10. Gary Wilson 7. Well, this is a common theme. It's been a good time if you like your deja vu, Phil. Deja vu fans have been in clover. All kinds of we had the repeat of 7 frames in a row to thwart Ronnie. We're also having a bit of a theme, aren't we, of Ronnie being level at 7-7 in frankly massive snooker matches and just going bang, 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 winning it in no time at all. He repeated that trick once again, around about half an hour, seems to be every time. Did it to Ali in the Masters, didn't he? Was it Ding as well at the UK? I think he did it.
Yeah.
And now this one, breaks of 97 and 129 in the last two frames. And yeah, you said about Gary, yeah, very downbeat he can be. Again, that's, you know, the nature of the character. One of the many things I love about this game, actually, is that you see those different characters come through in people. But Ronnie was very complimentary of Gary. And of course, he said in that interview that, you know, part of that, and you get the feeling that they will be a meeting of minds here, is that there's that sort of perfectionism, you know, because if you think about players that talk themselves down a lot in interviews, Ronnie would be right near the top of the list. Gary would be around that sort of area as well. And I kind of like the way I thought, yeah, Ronnie's sort of relating to that, because, you know, Gary can actually win matches and big ones, can't he? And he's, you know, I remember actually at the Crucible semi-final, which I think he lost quite convincingly to Judd. Judd came a pretty comfortable win, but still reached a world semi. And I was there for that, actually. But he was so downbeat. It was, you know, something else. And again, that's the sort of nature of his personality. The other one, Mark Williams beat Mark Allen 10-5. Well, Williams went 9-0 up. I mean, 8-0 after the first session, then won the first frame of the second session, just continuing this excellent form of his. I mean, listen, I wouldn't have lost sleep over it, but I don't think I wanted a whitewash, really. Someone like Alan, I wouldn't have been entirely comfortable with that myself, but it suddenly came to pass. But then wouldn't you know it, Alan won 5 frames in a row, funny old game, back to 9-5 before Williams sealed the win. So, a pair of very interesting semis there and left us with that class of 92 matchup that we've enjoyed so much on this final day of the tournament, Phil.
Yeah, and I hope Wilson did enjoy his performance against Ronnie, because he was really good to keep him up to 7-7. That was a great match. And Ronnie sort of pushed on to victory at the end, as you said. He has done a few times. But, Wilson found a bit flow. Actually, no, they interviewed him after the first session, didn't he? And when it was 4-4, and he was still saying that he was awful and he was very lucky to be at 4-4. But I think he was good in the evening. He's just gonna play absolute perfection to enjoy it. But he certainly had a very good showing this week, and it's been a great season for him. And he's going to be difficult to beat at the Crucible for sure. But O'Sullivan just had the better of it, and yeah, I mean, Williams ridiculous 9-0 up against Mark Allen. I mean, what, that was the kind of thing where you're checking the scores, you wouldn't believe it. But Williams just absurdly good, and you thought maybe, well, 8-0, it looked pretty over, obviously, but to come back after in the evening session and knocking a 140, it's just silly. And full credit to Alan to win those 5 on the spin with 5 breaks, showed what we know he's got in terms of bottle and grit. but I mean, he was fighting losing battle from there, wasn't he? So yeah, fantastic from Williams. And that was number three in the world, wasn't it? He'd already beaten number two in Judd, and then he just had number one to do in the final, which he did.
Not a bad week's work, really. Let's be honest. No, you're right. Gary was really good. In fact, the period that took it up to 7-7, he was really good. It was about then that I remember tweeting that I'd done a few predictions for the Crucible programme. And one of the questions was, which player do you see coming under the radar? And I ummed and ahed about it before going for Gary Wilson. He was the one that really shone out at me looking at the names that will be there. And I thought, I think it just about passes the test, actually, because hardly anyone will talk him up as a contender. But it only just passes now, I think, because he is looking more and more likely, Gary Wilson. He obviously can scrap away any form of the game, but long format has done and generally will suit him. He can take it to anyone in the game. And, you know, with a fair wind and, you know, that classic thing of getting out of sessions when he's not playing so well, which is always the key thing in the Crucible. And if he starts getting one together there, who knows? But he played really well. And you're absolutely right to point that out. And then we were left, of course, with the final, which, as we said, Mark Williams has won, beating Ronnie O'Sullivan by 10 frames to 5. Overall, I don't want to say I said so myself, but I think the column I wrote for Sporting Life was kind of borne out. I did feel it lost some gravitas with the move to 12 players, and I thought it was knee-jerk, really, after what happened with, obviously, a disappointing event in Hull, which one of the main factors was widely accepted, I think, to be that many of the big players weren't there. It was always unlikely that would be repeated. Of course, most of the big ones were there this year. But in saying that, it was still very strong. It had gravitas in reserve anyway, and it was still, you know, successful week, successful venue, very strong week, I thought, for the game, and everyone involved should be congratulated, Phil.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, the matches were never going to be the problem, were they? The expanded format still produced some great games. And, yeah, I mean, the highlight, really, of the whole thing, the one that, I mean, yeah, Williams will be the memorable bit, but really the new venue and the new location was a roaring success. The crowds looked brilliant. The whole place looked brilliant. I popped in one night. I went to the McDonald's one night, and I popped in one night in the week. Superb. People queuing around the corner in the rain to get in to see Ronnie. It was just, it was exactly what we wanted when we've spoken before about wanting tournaments in sort of big cities, filling them up in a great venue and great atmosphere. Pretty rowdy tonight, I have to say. I think if it had gone later, it could have got a bit too rowdy, but it was just about right. And it's there for another 2 years on the contract. So superb news on that front. Delighted that all went well, because we've been talking about for ages. We've been talking about all season, haven't we? Looking forward to going for it to come to fruition. And I think it lived up to all the expectations. So, yeah, no, that was good stuff.
Definitely. And, I mean, the only similarity between last year was the name of the tournament, wasn't it, really? It was absolute chalk and cheese. I mean, the last couple of days in Hull were okay, got a lot better crowds-wise, but it just looked the part, didn't it? Big crowds all the time. And, you know, it just looks better when it's like that. It's befitting of the tournament. And I'll always feel a little bit sorry for Hull, because I think one and done may have been a bit unfair when you consider there were probably a whole variety of nuanced reasons. But listen, no one's complaining about being in Manchester, one of our great cities. And, you know, it certainly delivered the goods. And the Tour Championship does go from strength to strength in terms of its stature in the game. But, of course, you know, the debate will go on over those earlier stages when, you know, whether it needs to go to 12 players, because I still thought, you know, there was something so neat, wasn't there, about the one table, the one match a day. And funny enough, would have been, you know, maybe looked even better in that venue, because we saw towards the end how good that one table looked. But nevertheless, but I quite like the old, you know, that the looking ahead to Sheffield thing with the dividing wall, that was, you know, more than a bit of a flavour. You know, the more dividing walls, the better in the game as well. So there's always nuance with the these things, but a successful tour championship, and what a sort of you know, way to prepare for Sheffield, which is now very much on the horizon, Phil. I think we'll move on, shall we, to world qualifiers. They're getting underway, aren't they? In only a matter of hours, we're speaking here on the Sunday night, underway Monday morning. And I thought a nice way of maybe linking to our last episode was to say that Liam Davis is one of the players in action against Ryan Thomason. What a guest Liam was on this podcast, Phil. We've really been inundated with compliments. And I'm glad people are as bowled over as I was and we were, because I was really blown away by the maturity of him, the fun of him, just, you know, he really sort of put a spring in my step the next couple of days, just thinking about how much fun he was to have around. Really wish him well. He's such a likeable character and bright future, and he talks such a good game, he plays such a good game, and it'll be so interesting to see, you know, how he gets on in the years to come.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he was really good. And yeah, it's just nice, you know, a lot of players sort of are down on stuff sometimes, not all of them and not all the time. But, you know, when you just hear the sort of buoyancy and the love of snooker, and he just wants to play all the time, he just got in from playing, just so excited about his career ahead. It was lovely to hear. And he's straight in Monday morning, opening up the show at the World Championship qualifiers. I'm sure plenty of people will be choosing to watch his match. I think it's all on Discovery Plus, and then Judgment Day, and is usually on Facebook, YouTube. I was looking at the odds, actually. I mean, this shows how highly he's rated, seeing as Ryan Thomason's a tour professional. Liam Davis is 6-1 on to win that game. So everyone's aware of how good he is. So it's going to be interesting. And I think if he build up some momentum, which no reason why he can't, if he does get through that game, as the bookies suggest he might, Jimmy Robertson next, you know, he'll give him a tough test. Now there's a few interesting games on the opening day. Who else have we got? Michael Holt, of course, back involved against Jing Zhihao. Bai Yu Liu playing, that's going to be really interesting. Jensen Kendrick, they were the two that really stood out for me. But then, yeah, we've got 8th to the 17th of April. It's longer than a lot of the tournaments we watch on TV, and it's just the qualifiers, but we love it.
We certainly do, yeah. It will be interesting indeed, as you mentioned there, to see Women's World Champion Bai Yu Liu meet Nutrat, also among the players in action on Monday, as his friend of the podcast, Liam Highfield. For a full list of matches, you should go to our friends, our good friends at snooker.org, who always provide such a brilliant service. And, of course, there will be details and news as well on the WST website. And we should say, though, a disappointing line in many ways, Phil, that Martin Gould has pulled out of his match against Jimmy White, meaning Martin will be off the main tour, a popular character in the game, and rightly so. And, in terms of popular characters, they don't get more popular than Jimmy, of course. He'll get a walkover in qualifying there, so he'll go into the next round. But, yeah, Martin, he's contributed quite a lot to the game, isn't he? It's sad. I mean, you know, it's not, you know, completely, you know, talk about the end for Martin, and you know, he could well come back and do well again, but at the moment it's not been his time, and it's a shame that he won't play in this match. I don't think he's sort of injury is part of the issue here, I think, isn't it, from what I understand.
I think so. We've not had a full sort of explanation. I actually tried to get hold of Martin before the withdrawal because of his precarious sort of tour situation, but yeah, he's had a back injury. He's had various injuries as well, I think, and obviously he went through that sort of struggle with mental health in the past, but I don't know if this is connected to that. I think it's more of an injury thing. But yeah, really sad. What a brilliant player. That last time, yeah, that was a few years ago when he was sort of on edge of dropping off tour and then came through and qualified at the Crucible and then hammered Steve Maguire. And he's got a brilliant record against Maguire. And I remember Stephen said after that game, like, he's just better than me. I can't do anything. He's just a better player than I am. Just like brutally honest. And that's how good he is on his day. Like, brilliantly attacking player. And yeah, he's only 42. So hopefully it's not the end. Just going off tour doesn't mean it's the end for anyone. I just don't know how serious the problem is. But yeah, real shame to see him drop off in that manner. But yeah, if you're a Jimmy White fan, as so many people are, I'd be delighted to see him in the next round against Liu Hongyu. And there was one other walkover as well, wasn't there? Dan Womersley got through because Mohamed Asif pulled out. Didn't see a reason why on that front. But Daniel Womersley, great result for him as well, straight into the next round against Aaron Hill. I don't know why we were talking about this, and we probably should have found out before talking, really, but not sure why people don't come in, don't replace withdrawals like they do in other tournaments at the World Championship. You know, they're not that late. I know in other tournaments they sort of try and get people in a matter of hours before games to start. So seems a shame to get walkovers in the first round. Obviously, if someone pulled out, it was due in the third round or whatever, that's different. But yeah, I'll try and find an explanation for that because it's a bit disappointing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it is. The only thing that does strike me is there are so many matches taking place and, you know, real barrage to them. It's not like it sort of sticks out, you know, what are we going to do, twiddling our thumbs with not much to watch. There is loads going on, but yeah, no, it's a very fair call, and, you know, good for those players that have, in many ways have got those walkovers. But yeah, you always want fields to be completed, don't you, in an ideal world, I think.
And I think there'll be players at the top of the Q School Order of Merit who would be sat with their queue not far away from them, who would have got to Sheffield in just record time if they could play. It's a shame for them more than anyone.
Indeed. Well, enjoy qualifying. Coverage on Discovery Plus. No doubt there'll be Judgment Day coverage with all bells and whistles coming as well towards the end of qualifying. So much at stake, of course. No kind of atmosphere like it in a way. And there'll be sort of, as I say, all the scores, all the news from snooker.org, WST. No doubt, Phil, you'll be across it extensively on your Twitter. And yeah, there'll be various other ways to follow it as well. David Caulfield will no doubt have good coverage, our friend. And we will, of course, follow it and also have that bated breath thing that we know we're getting closer and closer to the Crucible all the time. And now less than 2 weeks away, until we head to Snooker's most famous venue for the biggest tournament in the game. Well, we're going to move on then, but we should say now that you are listening to the Talking Snooker podcast with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Phil, the return of the tiered system for a number of events next season, the Home Nations events, as well as the German Masters, will have a tiered format, meaning that all of the world's top 32 players will start in the last 64 round of the final venue. So it's the events then, as we know, Home Nations, English Open, Northern Ireland Open, the Scottish Open to come later this year, and then the German Masters and Welsh Open early in 2025. Qualifying rounds, rounds one, we'll have players seeded 65 to 96 against players seeded 97 to 128. Then those 32 winners will play the players seeded 33 to 64. And then the last 64 stage will be those 32 qualifiers against the players seeded 1 to 32. WST says this change gives the lower ranked players the opportunity to earn prize money through the earlier rounds and beyond, while ensuring that television audiences and ticket holders can see the leading players at the final venue. To support this change, we will be increasing prize money for all these events to over 500,000. I'd say before we came on air, actually, I can't lose an enormous amount of sleep over this one. I mean, I think it's all to do with music a lot of the time. And I think in the game now, the feeling has been towards this. I mean, you know, the way I see it, people that are miles better qualified and versed in the game than I am have for some time been saying this really needs to happen. Bigger players will obviously avoid the qualifying stages now. Those lower down the rankings will likely enjoy more match wins now. But there is a sort of a bit of a loss of democracy as well, which kind of underpinned the sort of Barry Hearn years in recent times. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, no question. But I was thinking in terms of the television people, they won't be complaining because they'll see more of the stars now, won't we, when it comes to the sort of main stages of the tournaments?
Yeah, definitely. There's no perfect system. I think there's downsides to everything. And, you know, it may well we have this system for a while and then end up going back to the other one when people get sick of the downsides of this one. Yeah, loads of players have been calling this for a while, seen other players dead against it. You know, Barry Pinchers, I read his Facebook comments and he thinks it's a real backward step. So Alfie Burden saying something similar. So it's not unanimous, but a lot of people have been calling for it. Obviously, the top players have to win fewer games, you know, it's going to make sort of makes the ITV series a bit more skewed, doesn't it? Because people will have to win fewer games to get on the 1 year ranking list as well. So yeah, like I say, there's pros and cons. But plenty of people have been calling for it. The lower ranked players have been calling it for it because they get to play people similar to their rankings. That's good. It is definitely beneficial for the top players as well. So in that way, it sort of sounds like it suits everyone. But yeah, we'll see how much the lower ranked players like it after a while. They might love it. We'll see. But yeah, boosting prize money sounds good as well, doesn't it? So we'll see how it goes.
We certainly will. And Phil, we have correspondence, don't we? And we'll kick off with Hugh Grant. We're pretty sure, aren't we? It's not that one. Hi, Nick and Phil. I will be travelling from Australia to Sheffield for the last 5 days of this year's World Championship. As a big fan of you both, I really hope I'm able to meet you during that time. Anyway, my question relates to the legality of purchasing second-hand tickets for the 2024 World Championship. I'm still trying to purchase tickets for the semi-final and final sessions, but as you know, they are extremely difficult to obtain, particularly if you only go through the official ticket agents, Sheffield Theatres and See Tickets. I note that there are very expensive tickets available for sale through unofficial secondary marketplaces such as Viagogo, Exchange Tickets, etc. However, I am unsure whether those tickets are technically valid, as my understanding is that the ID of the person using the ticket must match the ID of the ticket purchaser, and it doesn't appear that the owner of the ticket is altered when purchasing tickets through those unofficial forums. I appreciate that Crucible Theatre staff don't routinely ask for or check the ID of the person entering the theatre, but I'm interested in understanding whether tickets from unofficial secondary marketplaces are actually valid. I've made a few inquiries attempting to get an answer to this question from the various secondary marketplaces, but so far I have been unable to get a straight answer. Anyway, Nick and Phil, thank you again for everything you do for snooker, and I truly hope I'm able to meet you in Sheffield in early May. With regards and deepest respect, Hugh. Doesn't get much better than deepest respect, Phil. That's pretty big, let's be clear. Thank you, Hugh. Very kind of you to message us. And, well, I don't think you're going to get a 99 or 100% straight or technically correct answer from me. All I will say is that I've used secondary ticket sites over the years for sport, for music, including quite often via Gogo, and never had a problem. I mean, I know it's frowned upon in some ways, but you know, you sometimes do what you got to do to get to these things. And you know, I would think there'll be no issues with that. I mean, look, having been a veteran of going to some of the very biggest sporting events in the world, frankly, you sometimes get these sort of stories. Oh, they'll be checking your name, checking your number. Very unrealistic. They do those sort of things, actually. Or when it comes to big sporting days and nights with lots of people going into a venue. I'm not saying it won't happen, but I'm saying that in my experience, that tends not to happen. But just to say as well that I had a little look the other day myself. Tickets are available for the World Championship. Not many, I'll grant you that. There might be singles a lot of the time and maybe the odd double, but tickets are available and they do pop up even on the official sites. Not loads, but listen, they are available. I know our friend Kelly Barker, friend of the podcast, Phil, is particularly across this, and I've often seen messages from her, but not just Kelly, others as well, saying that, you know, tickets do, sometimes they'll come in even bigger numbers on a particular morning and say there'll suddenly be like 50 or 60 available type thing. So I suppose on a wider point, not just to Hugh, if you are thinking about going to this World Championship, don't give up. Tickets do become available, you know, and I've seen it myself with my own eyes in recent days. But in terms of answering those questions, I hope I've done it as best as I can. And maybe we'll have a beer in your case and an Americano in my case with Hugh, Phil. Who knows?
Yeah, that sounds nice. I think I echo those things. I've used those things before and it's always been fine, but I've never used it at the Crucible, so I couldn't say for sure. But if anyone has who's listening who can help you out, then let us know, because that'd be good. And yeah, hopefully see you in Sheffield, Hugh. We've got Suzanne here. Hello, Nicky. Hello, Nick, and hello, Phil. I would like to send a couple of lines about the non-existent broadcasting of the Tour Championship in Germany. DAZN have the broadcasting rights to the tournament in Germany, but they do not broadcast it. In fact, snooker has even vanished from their list of sports on the German homepage. Now, I'm not complaining about a lack of opportunities to watch snooker in Germany. I'm actually spoiled, as I can watch a lot of it on Discovery Plus all year. What is upsetting me is that DAZN spend money on the broadcasting rights and then they do not make use of it. And by doing so, they practically block the broadcasting rights to everyone else. It's an absurd situation without anyone gaining from it, not even themselves. I have written to DAZN complaining about this matter, but no answer so far. I do not expect an answer anyway, as they seem to be interesting only in soccer these days. I have not been a paying customer for a long time, as I do not have an active DAZN subscription. And why would I? I can only hope that whatever contract they have snooker broadcasting will end soon. Best wishes from Germany, and thank you for the good work you keep doing all year, Suzanne. Well, sorry to hear that, Suzanne. Yeah, I know that so the ITV events have different broadcasters, obviously, across Europe and it and other places, so it has been difficult, I've heard on social media. But yeah, that is annoying. I haven't really got anything to add. I don't know much about German broadcasting rights, I'm afraid, but sorry you've had to deal with that.
No, I haven't got too much to add to that as well. I know there were sort of difficulties, you know, across various countries. Some tournaments just won't have very good broadcasting arrangements. And so it sounds like one of those. So, you know, I know DAZN are generally quite well thought of in the way they cover sport. And you're right to sort of suggest that that soccer, football is a big player for them. I think boxing was, wasn't it? Or still is. But yeah, no, it's obviously a disappointment, but thank you for sort of letting us know about it. I mean, I think generally on television, I sort of stick to what I said last time. I know there are sometimes grounds for complaint, you know, but I think most of the time, we as a community of snooker fans, whichever country we're in, we're particularly spoiled in the UK, let's be clear. But I think generally across the board, we're very fortunate with how much we can see of snooker. We really are. And a lot of it free television in the UK, certainly. But when we can't see events, we're obviously disappointed. You know, we're gutted because we want to see them, you know, properly. And so, no, so thank you for letting us know about that. And let's move on to Brian McGovern in Ireland, who says, "Hi, Nick and Phil. Just a quick note to let you know I enjoyed the episode with Liam Davis. I also listened to some of the episodes in the back. Episodes including Colin Murray and Hazel Irving. Two great episodes. Keep up the good work, and I hope Nick enjoyed the trip on the milk float. Best wishes, Brian." That's a reference to me going to Chelsea v Manchester United last week. But I'm a late person in life. I'm a night owl person, so I'm often advocating for later sport. But I must admit, you know, sometimes it works in places like Spain, particularly in there's more Mediterranean climates, but I'm not sure here. And actually, having been to that 8:15 game, I mean, it, you know, you know very well, being a journalist, Phil, you're waiting around for sort of managers after the game. And it was the Manchester United manager first, Erik ten Hag. Then it was the Chelsea manager, Mauricio Pochettino. And literally, you know, as soon as he finished talking, the journalists virtually all pegged it out. You know, it's too late, but too late for newspapers anyway then. So, you know, I mean, they're not all newspapers, there's websites and everything else, but literally, you know, we've got to go. We've got to get the last shoe's probably gone. Well, we're lucky to get the milk flow. It's so late. But that was that. And I also loved it, Phil. I saw an absolutely thrilling game. It was 3-2 until Chelsea scored, I think, with goals on 99 and 101 minutes. Obviously, you know, lucky man to see a game like that. But someone said on social media, "You could have been watching snooker." I like a bit of that. It reminds me of Why Don't You, Phil? Well, that's one for the teenagers. I could have been doing something less boring instead. And that's why, you know, I'm thinking of naming my memoirs, "You Should Have Been Here Last Night, Mate." I actually got that a bit from Martin Samuel, I think a wonderful writer. Years ago, 20-odd years ago, he wrote a brilliant column about how he covers a lot of European football, which often involves arriving in a city on Monday night or Monday generally for like European Cup ties on the Tuesday or Wednesday, maybe even Sunday. But either way, he'd often be like, "Oh, mate, you should have been here last night. That was when the time to be here. A brilliant fiesta over the weekend in these sort of Spanish cities, or, you know, a beer carnival in Germany, whatever it was, but always arriving the day, big fan of that, arriving just after a good thing, yes. So thanks for that, Brian. And yeah, well, you know, Colin Murphy I've got here. I think he means Colin Murray, doesn't he? Now I think about
it. Well, it could be Sean Murphy.
We don't know. Do you mean Colin Murray or Sean Murphy, Brian? I probably should have subbed that. Don't have time for subbing in our busy lives, Phil. But let's say they were both great. Sean Murphy was typically good value, as he always is on everything. And Colin Murray, yeah, he was terrific, wasn't he? Talking about some of you've been to the same music festival, and I remember that you were talking about was it Leeds Festival? Might have been. And as for Hazel, magic episode, magic. Being able to ask Hazel Irving about working with Dickie Davis. You know, there are some times in my life and my career, I think that's great for me. And that was up there. That was really special. So thank you for your kind words. And Brian, I think one of our nicest fans, Phil, you know, he's always paying us compliments. He's just the most delightful character. So many thanks to you, Brian.
Yeah, for sure. Talking to Liam and Hazel there, I mean, I hope this isn't revealing anything I shouldn't, but Liam texted me after the episode apologising for swearing at the end. And I said, oh, not to worry, absolutely fine on here. Just don't do it in front of Hazel Irving on the BBC. Then you might get in some trouble, but we'll accept the odd one here from such a great guest.
Two people, I think, that to my knowledge, have sworn on this podcast. Liam Davis once, who's 17, and Rob Walker about 25 times, and he's not 17. Okay, he's not 17. On with the show, Phil.
Here's Adam Lang. Hello, gents. Relatively new listener to the podcast, but it straight away became my snooker podcast of choice. I always look forward to new episodes and listening to two guys who love the game as much as I do. I personally think the use of VAR style system could only be a good thing. They already use a similar system when replacing balls after a foul, as it's obviously important to get those situations right. The game is more often than not played in good spirit, and players are forthcoming with calling fouls on themselves. So I don't think it would be something that's regularly called on. Referees do a great job, but sometimes it comes down to millimetres, and it can be impossible for a ref to get close enough to observe without getting in the way or the player's eye line. I'm sure it would be welcomed by the majority of players. Keep up the great podcast, Adam. Well, yeah, there are a couple of sort of... This is going to be a nice segue, actually, into the next piece of news. a couple of sort of examples of that in the Tour Championship, wasn't there, when sort of questionable fouls occurred that Paul Collier gave both. Excellent referee, obviously, but there were sort of... Some people were questioning a couple of those decisions. But, yeah, I mean, replays are there and have been used in the past and can be used, so I don't know why they wouldn't be. I think they can, though. I've seen it happen. So, yeah, I think it's already there. It's just whether people use them or not, as far as I'm aware. But, yeah, big news for Paul Collier, though, is that he'll be refereeing the World Championship final again. This will be his fourth one, is that right?
Fourth one.
Quite incredible stuff, and congratulations to him. He was a brilliant, another great guest on here.
Yeah.
But fourth World Championship final is quite something, isn't it?
We timed that quite well, actually. I mean, listen, Paul's not leaving snooker, let's be clear. He's making the point himself very firmly that he's carrying on doing his tournament directing and very much involved with the game. But it's a goodbye to the refereeing side. And he was on in January, and I thought he was brilliant. I knew he would be, but I thought he was absolutely terrific. Again, we got loads of compliments for that. So, yeah, fourth time. I think the first was 20 years ago, the 04 final, which would have been Ronnie and Graham Dott, I think, perhaps. So, yeah. A crowning way to go out, it has to be said. Yeah, so congratulations to Paul. That's brilliant. And we wish you well with that, Paul. I'm sure you're doing a terrific job with the final coming up at the Crucible and, of course, generally at the World Championship. And, of course, we wish you well with everything you're doing in the future in the game. Phil, I asked the question about VAR. I don't know if it's not time to just say, well, look, it should be used more. I mean, it's a slow-moving game. There are natural stoppages. I don't really see the drawback. I mean, I know people say, oh, it's not been used. I mean, this is very much going off topic. First of all, people say it's not been done well in football. Well, it's been done really well in rugby and cricket. So why don't you use those examples, first of all? And, yeah, football hasn't probably got it right. But I am not one of the big VAR knockers, actually. I'm a little bit the other way, partly because I think I remember listening to football phone-ins for years and years, and fans didn't accept refereeing decisions. They were demanding technology. Now, this may not have been the technology they wanted. It may have gone further than maybe most of us expected. But anyway, it's not a football podcast, I know. But, you know, I think that, you know, we're getting more of the right decisions more of the time generally. But that's a different sport entirely. It's a fast-moving sport. This isn't. There are stoppages, and I don't see why it can't be used. Then again, it can only be used for certain things, couldn't it? Like that push shot, VAR's not going to help with that, is it?
No, really,
it's more to do with the sound he saw at the time and what he saw in real time. And I'm going to admit, I'm not technically versed enough in the game to say whether that was a push shot myself, actually. I don't know that. There's part of me that thinks it didn't look like a classic conventional type of push shot, but I really couldn't say for sure. I'd have to leave that to others that are far better qualified than me. Gary Wilson, very sportingly, didn't he, said that,
questioned it, didn't he? Yeah.
Questioned it. I mean, the other one, I was a little bit surprised that so many people was saying how close that was. But that did look a little bit like it was one. I mean, I'm surprised by anyone that didn't think that was the red first. But then again, it's easy for us, isn't it, Phil? Because we see it again and again. There's only one view. But again, that comes back to, I think, there perhaps should have been an opportunity to go to the monitor there to see it.
Yeah.
Pop them over. Looks like red first. I'd be surprised if 90 people out of 100 didn't think it was red first. Never mind. It's not a foul. Let's get on with the game type thing.
Yeah, well, I think that was the perfect example where you can just go and have a quick look at a replay and then it would take no time at all really to get it fixed. Because that is a situation and this sport and why certain sports work with VAR is when it's not a matter of opinion. It's just whether that hit there and you can all see it. The problem with football is so many of the rules are subjective. You know, you can have someone in a room looking at a screen deciding whether something's a foul, as well as the referee decides the foul. They might not agree with each other. No one's right or wrong. The laws are too up for debate. Whereas in, you know, we work so well in cricket on umpiring decisions because nothing is opinion based. It's just where the ball pitches, where it hits the batsman, all those things. Football's just a nightmare for it. But snooker should be fine for it. Yeah, you can see on the replay which ball it hit first. So yeah, I think. You know, it doesn't come up very often at all. It's not like the game needs sort of turning on its head to welcome in VAR. But, you know, in the odd situation where it can be used, why not?
What did Phil Haig's eyes say? Red first?
Did look like that, yeah.
Better say. Phil, let's move on to any other business. And, well, it's all about Sheffield, isn't it? All roads lead there. Your roads are already there. The rest of our roads are leading there. Qualifying coming up, going to be absolutely gripping, isn't it? Day after day of checking scores, watching as much action as we can, and of course the ultimate prize, getting to that most special of sporting events. We are looking forward, are we not, to 17 magical days and nights at the Crucible. It's on the way. And that's starting to dominate our thoughts now, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's no longer on the horizon. We're there. The qualifying, I think it is as strong a qualifying field as I've seen. You know, there's so many big names and loads of people. You look at them and you're like, well, surely he'll get through. But they're not all going to. You know, when a lot of people making their sort of tips to qualify, I think on some of them, you just got to think, even though that looks very likely to get through, you know, you can't just back them all. So you've got to take a punt on someone coming through from deeper or causing a surprise. So there's going to be some hot favourites to qualify who will miss out. I'm certain of that. But yeah, if you were picking 16 qualifiers, if you managed to get half is a good effort, I think. Certainly 10 would be superb. But yeah, some great stuff to come. Very edgy stuff to come. And yeah, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, very much so. Well, a couple of things from me. Obviously, my last Sporting Life column on the Tour Championship, and my view on the increase to 12 players is there, available for you to read. I'll have another column, All Being Well, before the World Championship, and I also plug that, of course, on social media, my social media. And I am in the process of writing, towards the latter stages of writing, a special piece for the World Championship programme. Luca Purcell has been talking to me about that famous win of last year and his season since. So that's to come as well. And I know, Phil, of course, you'll have absolutely loads coming up with various stars of the game. This is the time of year where we're just starting to wonder, are we going to get any sleep?
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, I've got a few in the bank coming this week with some guys in qualifying. Had a really interesting chat with Liam Highfield. I'm looking forward to putting that one up. Ben Mertens I spoke to as well. So, yeah, there's a few coming up. And then, obviously, ahead of the big one, plenty of stuff. Not going to be a shortage of stories this year, I don't think, in snooker. So, yeah, lots to look forward to.
Indeed. And I think our next episode will be following qualifying. We'll have so much to review and look back on, including the excitement of Judgment Day, or days, to be precise, plural. And then looking ahead to the big one at the World Championship. So let's make you finish off, Phil, by once again talking about that wonderful evergreen star, Mark Williams. You know, he really is something else. You know, he just keeps putting these trophies on the board. You think, oh, he might stop there, but no, he's just producing another fine season. And as you say, to beat those players that he just did, there's always those moments, isn't there? Maybe that one against Tom Ford was a classic example. It had gone 9-9. He was in real trouble in that frame. Produces a brilliant clearance. I mean, I like it. I said it before, I know, but I like it sometimes that photos can tell you more than videos. There was much. You see a picture, still image of that table when Mark came to it. Oh, the balls all over the place on the cushions, Phil. How did he do it? By sheer brilliance. Yeah.
I think that was sort of illustrative of how Tom Ford was after that game, because that was a devastating way to lose a decider. And that is a very big game for anyone, but for Tom as much as anyone. He hadn't had many wins ever against Williams. And to think he had one foot in the next round, miss not a straightforward red, but one he should get, and then to lose like that. But he didn't seem, I don't know, he didn't seem that disappointed. He obviously was, but like he was just sort of, that was so good. It was the quality of it sort of took the edge off a bit. It was brilliant. It was one of those things, you know, sometimes shots or clearances, they talked up for a while and they get talked up so much you think, oh, was it that good? That one was that good. That was superb. So, yeah, and then cruised it from there. And as I was saying before, it just seems so unlikely. No one was talking about Mark Williams as a contender to win this tournament. Not that anyone's stunned that he has, obviously, because it's Mark Williams, but did not seem very likely, and he's done it in supreme style. So yeah, can't wait to see him play again in Sheffield.
I'm saluting you, which is absolutely pointless on an audio service, and enjoy the qualifying. So I know you will. I know how much you personally do love this. You know, I know it's your work as well, but you know, it's such a special time, and it's just the next few weeks are just absolutely mouthwatering, and then we'll get our heads around the draw as well. And look ahead to all the first round matches. So look back at qualifying, look ahead to the first round of the Crucible next time we gather. One of our big episodes of any season, it obviously is. There's so much to review and look forward to. Mouthwatering snooker all the way now.
Absolutely, yeah. Can't wait. I'm sure everyone else is in the same boat. It's time. It's Sheffield time. Enjoy it.
That's not bad. It's Sheffield time. I quite like that. Thanks for listening, everybody. And congratulations once again to Mark Williams, winner of the Tour Championship. Enjoy everything to come at World Qualify. We'll be back afterwards to look back at it all, and also then to look ahead to those 17 days at the Crucible. But for now, from your old friends, Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf, cheerio.
Sports Social Podcast Network.